Welcome to Baltimore Boomerang, a podcast from Baltimore Magazine. We've combed through more than 100 years of our archives to revisit and update you on some of the magazine's most intriguing stories. Here's what we've found out. I'm Jess Mayhew, and I'm the digital editor at Baltimore Magazine.
So welcome to Baltimore Boomerang. This is our 15th episode, and I couldn't be more excited because we are talking about a topic that's really near and dear to my heart. We are following up on a cover story I wrote in February 2017 about the local beer scene, and one of the sidebars focused on women in craft beer. Actually, Judy, you were quoted in that story. And while the industry is most certainly still a boys' club, that perception is changing, and it has even grown leaps and bounds since I reported on it. So with me today to talk about the progress and likely the work that still needs to be done are Holly Stevenson, the head brewer at Guinness Open Gate Brewery and Barrel House.
Good job.
Yes. In Halethorpe, Judy Neff, the co-owner and brewer at Checker Spot Brewing in South Baltimore, and Yasmin Karamian, the co-owner of Suspended Brewing in Pigtown. Thank you guys so much for coming and being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, it's 11 a.m. Usually I see you guys during later hours than this. So in the 2017 article, we talked to a few female brewers, including Judy, like I mentioned, just about the perception of women in the craft beer industry. We said that the numbers are changing. There was a survey that said out of 2,500 breweries around the country, 21% had at least one woman in a top tier role, which how do you kind of define top tier role is an interesting question too. But we also quoted women who experience sexism fairly often, both inside and outside the industry. So I wanted to sort of ask each one of you how you first got into craft beer and how being a woman presented challenges for you in the beginning, if it did.
I mean, I can start. So I started homebrewing about 15 years ago, just as a side hobby. It was fun. I got really into it. Read everything I could get my hands on about brewing. So I'm a scientist, so I, you know, delved pretty deep into the science side and technical side of it. You know, that sort of took off, and, you know, long story short, decided to take the leap, you know, and work around with some other breweries in the area to start to scale up to commercial size. Yeah, it's been great from there. I guess any issues with being a woman, it was sort of hard at the beginning in the homebrew community. It was basically myself and then Chris Anderson, who owns Maryland Homebrew, and that was it at the homebrew club meeting. So it was, you know, 30, 40, 50 dudes and Chris and me. So it was easy, you know, for me to remember her, yeah, and her man, her me. But then it was, you know, sort of a sea of guys. So it's been really fun to see over the years more women starting to come to meetings. You know, because it, you know, was a little intimidating at first, especially because a lot of these people, it's a social outlet that they had been doing for years as well. So they were all friends, and but no, they've been great. They sort of took me in. Nobody really seemed to care that much, but
yeah. And I guess you stand out in that group too, which is a weird silver lining.
Yeah.
Holly, I know you've been brewing for a really long time, all around the country, even internationally. Yeah. What was it like for you?
So I mean, I got into beer at kind of an interesting career crossroads, and I got into it because I became a fan of craft beer and started paying attention and kind of learning about the industry, and just happened to be that time in my life where I could go get an education and make kind of the career change. And that was awesome. I was the only female in my brewing class. I was the first, so I was the third woman to have brewed on the Stone Brewing Company.
Right.
To have actually brewed on the brew house. And then shortly after I started, Stone started hiring more women. And it's actually hired a ton of women, like, since then.
They just posted something on social media about, like, International Women's Day, actually.
Also, Laura Ulrich, who still works at Stone, is the president of Pink Boots National. So I was lucky to be in, you know, in a company that, like, someone had trailblazed, and, you know, I think, like, once you kind of hire, like, other women, it kind of, like, it gives other women an opportunity to say, oh, maybe that's, like, not such a bad place, right? Or they obviously hire women, like, you kind of start to gain a critical mass. But for me, like, starting out, I found it really hard the first times that I would go to CBCs, like, craft beer conferences. I found it really hard to kind of start networking, which is not something that I am bad at. But I found it really hard to kind of strike up conversations. And so, but it's kind of hard to tell, you know, like I didn't really have a brewing resume yet. It's kind of hard to tell whether you were just like
green.
Yeah. Green and no one really cared, or if it had to do with you being female or a combination.
Yeah.
Well, and then I still face, like, even today, which it's astounding, the typical offenders nowadays are people that come in to try to sell things, which is odd.
That's not a good sales tactic.
Yeah, right? Yeah. It's like, if there is a guy within 10 feet of me, like, that's who they're talking at.
Right.
You know, it's not everybody. Obviously, I have good relationships with some people, but it's usually, like, the new...
But it is crazy in 2019. Yeah. And Yasmin, I know you opened Suspended. How many years has it been now?
It's only been one.
Really?
Although it feels like a lifetime.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we worked on the project for 5 years.
I talked to you a long time ago about it. That's probably why.
Yes.
So how has it been in your first year with, you know, and even how did you get into brewing? Did you kind of find challenges?
Yeah. Mine was a very different journey. I made a deal with my dad that if I went to law school, I could do anything I wanted after law school. Poor guy. I sat him down at Mad Fox Brewing in Falls Church and was like, well, this is what I want to do.
It's not exactly law school.
Yeah. I was also just a huge fan of it. I just really liked the culture. You know, when we were just visiting breweries, there you didn't see a lot of women. I remember like geeking out when I would see a woman in the brew house. I'm Alchemist. When I was up there, I saw a woman and I was fangirling. So like I was sweating. I was like, oh my gosh. So that's how I fell into this industry. But with Suspended, it's been really good. You know, there are a lot of days. I do work front of the house, so I work tap room. And I run the place from Fridays through Sundays. And then for our brewer, he's there Monday through Thursday. So we have, like, a definite I see a lot of things. The cool thing about our culture is that anytime things happen, it rarely falls on the person who it's happening to. I feel like the whole community stands up and is like, you don't belong here, and that type of attitude doesn't belong in our world. And so we have a really cool culture, and I would say when you come in, most of the seats at the bar are taken by regulars or neighborhood people or people who are just looking to have conversations like this.
And they got your back.
And they got our back, yeah.
That's so, really cool.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you both kind of mentioned like seeing women in those roles and being like, okay, they can do that. And it's just about seeing yourself, which we're hearing a lot about, not just with gender, but with all different backgrounds. So that's... I'm sure people see you guys and have those same thoughts, which has got to be kind of cool. And it's weird, too. It's historically brewing. I mean, women brewed back in the day. I mean, they were like the queens of doing it. And so I wonder what your theories are on why this industry, like, now caters to, like, big, burly, bearded men. Like, that seems to be the stereotypical brewer. You know, why do you think that shift happened? Or is it just...
Because it's cool now.
Yeah. When it got, like, trendy
here. Yeah. I mean, before it was just, like, how you provided as a woman in your societal role. You know, like, it's totally different
now. You're in the
now.
Kitchen,
Yeah.
Well, back then, too, women were, you know, really tough. They were raising tons of kids. They were out there sort of doing a lot of sort of heavy lifting.
Manual labor,
things like that. Like, that wasn't frowned upon for a woman to... lift a big heavy thing. It wasn't, oh, that's not feminine.
Right.
You know, they were just trying to, you know, provide for their family, and it was a much more sort of, this is what we do, we're not that different. And then obviously there's the industrialization where as soon as you could start making a bunch of money from it, then, you know, that sort of obvious stuff. But I mean, I think even when a lot of the smaller breweries started, they didn't have much money. So even the guys I've known who have been in this business for a long time, I mean, they have messed themselves up. You know, people were doing these crazy feats of strength that even, you know, the biggest, burliest guy can't do that every day and not end up with serious back problems and knee problems and things like that.
Right.
But I think it's sort of with the whole movement with women, it's not frowned upon anymore for a woman to be strong and, you know, to be able to, you know, all the powerlifting women and strength training, like to actually be stronger.
Ninja
and then,
warrior,
you know,
women.
With the introduction of women into things, you actually start doing things a little smarter as well. Because you say
you don't have to do it the dumb way.
Yeah.
Like, you might be strong enough to do it, but you shouldn't do it
that
way.
Do
it the
it's
right
sort of
way.
Bringing that humility into it where it's like, having this one body, I want to be able to use it when I'm 80 years old.
Yeah,
right.
And so the way we've designed the brew house has been, to minimize that. No, I carry ladders and I can, carry grain bags and things like that. But, all in all, the decisions that we made were sort of trying to work better for men and women,
And it's not like the 1950s anymore. You don't have to have this like dainty.
You're not dainty and
persona, yeah, which is really cool.
Yeah.
But even with women in breweries in general, which is definitely increasing as we talked about, there seems to be this idea that women aren't going to be in the production. They're not going to be in the brew house. They're going to be front of house, office manager or sales. Marketing, sales. Do you still get people surprised to learn that you are actually the ones making the beer, and how do those conversations go?
God, yes.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, do people assume that you are like marketing or something sometimes? Or?
So not really for me anymore, but just as an example, I was interviewing for a brewer. I was interviewing someone for a brewer role. And then I was taking them around on taking her around on a tour afterwards, and someone came up who works at the company and was like, oh, like I introduced them, said this was it's the end of an interview, and they said, oh, so what are you interviewing for? And I'm like, well, I'm interviewing her, so they assumed that even though she was with me on an interview that she might not be interviewing for a brewer role, and this was coming from an innocent, sweet, amazing person. Really? And it was just this subconscious thing.
Right. It's almost like instinctual. It's like you have to reprogram people's brains or
totally.
Something.
People don't. Nobody's ever said it in a mean way. Like, no, once they found out that I'm a brewer, nobody's ever said, you can't be a brewer, you're a girl.
Yeah.
People have usually been either embarrassed is the most common.
Yeah.
Where they're like, totally. Oh my God, I can't believe that it didn't even dawn on me that you would be the brewer and that, your husband would be sales and distribution.
Yeah.
So it's that's the more common one. And then also people are just like, oh my God, that's so cool. That's the coolest thing, a woman brewer. This is amazing. This is so cool. There aren't very many of you guys out there, are there? And so a lot of times people get really, really, really excited, especially other women. But a lot of guys, guys who are really into beer, just think it's so cool. That it's just something different out there and something that you don't see at every single brewery that you go to.
Yeah,
but people are always surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me it's interesting. So when I got into beer culture, I started home brewing, and that was kind of my gateway. I do not brew. I have had that interaction where someone was like, you can't lift that 50-pound bag of grains. And I was like, oh, yeah, but I can lift, 10 5-pound buckets of it. No problem. I got this. I can mill in. I got
smarter.
This.
Yes. Yeah.
But I have people to the point where they, till I am blue in the face, will not believe me when I tell them, the brand of our equipment. I'm finally to the point where I'm like, okay, you know what? Go right on back. Look at the label. You do not believe that I could possibly know what the equipment that I helped order from the company that we specifically wanted because it was American-made steel. We had all these criteria, and, they will not believe me.
That's crazy.
So that part is very frustrating to me. I think maybe if I had the title of brewer, it would be a little bit,
But it's you can't read a catalog? What are they?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The disconnect is strange to me.
Yeah.
And what about when you kind of tell people what your job is just in the general world, your family, and are there surprises there? Or is that less to do with your gender, you think,
I think it's cool right now. I think right now, people, they think it's just this, cool project. They're like, oh, wow. But I don't know that they realize that this is a lifestyle choice and there's a lot of sacrifices that you make with choosing this industry.
We don't just go to work and drink all day.
Right.
Yep.
Which is what a lot of people seriously think.
Yep. Oh, my gosh. I bet.
Yeah.
They
think
a
lot of parties.
I mean, it's a full-blown career for all of you. And, and it's not a project. It's interesting you use the word project. I'm like, it's not like a side, I don't know.
Yeah,
kind of hustle. It's a full-blown job. So hopefully people are realizing that. There were so many stories that came out last year about harassment in the culinary world. And I imagine working in a production brewery and in a commercial kitchen have their similarities, just sort of lifestyle-wise, long hours, as we're talking about, lots of laborious work. Are there stories like that that exist in the brewery world that people just don't talk about, or is it not as prevalent as you think in kitchens?
I guess it's the number of staff. So
yeah,
obviously we just, you know, we're super small, so in a small brewery like we are, unless you're a very tight-knit sort of family, it's not going to work no matter what. And so we don't have just one person whose job it is to take out the trash only or just do dishes. You know, it's when you join and it's small, you're doing a little bit of everything, and we need to trust you with, you know, here's the lock to the safe. Like, I need to be able to trust this small group of people with everything. So anything like that would never be tolerated, and it wouldn't be hidden versus in a larger company with a ton of people, you can't, you know. I don't know if you guys have any.
I think there are some stories out there that have even happened recently. I can't remember the last brewery it was a brewery out west, and I think the brewery owner raped a tap room worker, or maybe even two. And I don't know, there are definitely stories that you can find. Like, they don't make the mainstream media, but it's definitely out there. And I think like anything that's uncomfortable or that is could cause you to lose your job, like, it's going to be underreported, like, chronically.
Right.
So, I mean, I've been fortunate for sure in the places that I've been to not have experienced anything terrible like that. But I mean, it happens.
Yeah. Especially Judy and Yasmin, you work with your significant others, so that's kind of a different situation.
Well, we're owner, you know.
Exactly.
If anybody, nobody has more power than we do, so you can't threaten me with any, there's nothing you can threaten me with.
I like that line.
But it's...
Yeah. But it is hard when you are the first of your, you know, the burden that these women carry to not share their stories at points, you know, to not discourage other women from joining the industry. It's a heavy burden. I think women are finally starting to talk to one another. The Pink Boots group has like a closed group. And now I've started to see people post and share and say, hey, what do I do about this situation?
Yeah.
And it's not here yet, but it is here. And I think that's a really beautiful thing, because there's this community of women saying, hey, this has happened to me, or these are the steps I took to prevent this.
Yeah. Whether it was harassment or getting passed over for raises time and time again.
Right.
Like, I've seen that, as well.
Well,
developing
equity
and
pay is still a very real thing for everybody. Let's talk about the Pink Boots Society. I know you brought it up. Not everyone probably listening knows what that is. And I know that you're trying to stir the pot and get it started here in Baltimore. So can you kind of explain what it is?
Yeah. It is an organization of women in the industry. I think it was started in the 70s.
No, not that long ago.
Okay.
90s?
Probably the 90s,
That's
yeah.
what I would guess.
Yeah, I think the 90s.
I was just reading on it like 2 days ago, and I already can't remember. But so it really focuses on women in the industry, of having this presence of scholarships, education, networking. I have reached out when we were first starting. There was a group of women in California who were sick. I mean, they just made such a big difference for me and such an impact. And at Craft Brewers Conference, I felt very out of place. When you go to CBC, you kind of look around and you're like, no one really looks like me.
It's a sausage fest.
It's good for bathroom lines, though.
Yeah,
it's very good.
Oh, I bet. But that was the group of women that really took me in and kind of helped me through our process and a lot of hurdles that we were hitting.
So they do events, and what are sort of the activation?
I mean, primarily, so the chapters will do events and raise funds. Like, we just, again, it's just brewed for International Women's Day, and 50% of our proceeds from that brew are going to go to Pink Boots. And, like, for example, the North Carolina chapter throws a big, they just have their second annual, like, a big festival.
Nice.
And they donate all the proceeds, like, every penny to Pink Boots, which is cool. So Pink Boots' national primary function is to distribute scholarship funds.
Oh,
so that's, they've been kind of working toward that. I think for the longest time, it was networking, and then kind of the new wave of young women entering the industry, and largely spearheaded by Laura, has really changed kind of the model. And
From Stone, that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's actually got a pink boot scholarship.
Oh, cool.
So I have my, awesome. I got my pink boot, my steel toe pink
boots. Oh, they actually give you pink boots?
Yeah, at the end of that's so cool. You write up an article that you get to publish somewhere, and then you get your steel toe pink boots. But yeah, it was really cool. It was when I was, sort of finally decided to make that leap. Like, okay, we're going to open the brewery. This is actually happening. So I applied for a scholarship and won one to Bend. It was like a week-long course, so you want to start a brewery. So it was lawyers, accountants, the guys from Ninkasi came out. So it wasn't like hands-on for brewers. It was more for like the business side of all right, name, like all this type of stuff. And so sort of workshopping together. And so that was a really special experience that I wouldn't have been able to afford or do without the Pink Boot Scholarship.
That's cool.
And I know that you're trying to get, I know there's a DMV chapter, right, of Pink Boots, but you want a specific Baltimore chapter?
Pink Boots, I think this past year, a year and a half ago, there was conversations about reorging the area because traffic and getting to one another, and even Virginia itself was like, hey, it's too much for us to be driving into D.C. And so they broke up some of the chapters. I think Frederick has their own now, and Baltimore, we've had two meetings.
Hey, that means it started.
Yeah. And different people came out to both, which was really cool. And so the last one, we did some, Michelle over at Union did some, a presentation on quality control. And the one before that was just not working. So it's definitely in a very infant stage.
Yeah. Well, speaking of local groups, Judy, I know you founded Baltimore Beer Babes. And so can you talk a bit about why you wanted to start the group and sort of what you guys try to do for the community?
Yeah, so we started about 6 or 7 years ago. So it's funny, we're actually a chapter of the Barley's Angels, which is the Pink Boots sort of sister group that is not, so Pink Boots is for women in the brewing industry, so career people, and then this is a sort of craft beer appreciation for women.
Got it. Barley's Angels is a cool
name. We didn't use that name, but we're technically one of the chapters of them, so it all sort of comes back around the Pink Boots. But along with Aaron Tyler from Legends Distributing, Chris, who I mentioned before, who owns Maryland Homebrew, and then Lisa Lawson, who is has been pretty high up, and it's called SPBW, so it's a Society for Preservation of Beer in the Wood, so it's a cask appreciation education type group. We all got together. They were the only women I knew who were involved with anything to do with beer in any way, shape, or form at that time. We got together. It was sort of based around Barley's Angels, where you have to have, there's some sort of educational component, tasting and a little bit of food. And the goal was to have, what I wanted to see and what still makes me happy is going into Max's and you see like four young, beautiful women walking up to the bar ordering, which triple is better, this one or that one, or but really making sophisticated beer choices based on things that they know. So, that it's the guy and the girl who go up to the bar together. And she turns to him and says, you know what you'd like? Nice. You'd like a Saison. I'm going to have a stout, that type of thing.
I even think like customer-facing stuff has changed because it used to be I would go into Max's and they would recommend something fruity or something or something sour for me. And I do like those things. Yeah. So I was like, you're not wrong. But and now it's take a look at the beer menu. I feel like there's
What do you feel like? What do you like?
Yeah, is there a little more quality when they're talking to different customers? And I've seen that change even in the past like 5 years, which is super cool. And I know that you guys built Suspended to sort of be, is Nano Brewery kind of correct?
We're at 2.5 barrels. So I don't know what the technical, I think we're technically still a microbrewery, but we're a little,
But that probably means, and I know you built it to really focus on community. And so that probably means you're just having a lot of conversations with your customers all day. Do you feel like there's that stigma has changed a little bit? Do you feel like there's a little bit more of an idea of inclusiveness? Are you still kind of battling with that stuff with certain customers?
I think when customers come in for the first time, they're still unsure of us. And so I had a black woman sit at the bar, and I walked up to her, and I was like, what would you like? What do you tend to drink? And she was like, I drink craft beer. And I was like, no, I believe you. Like, I like it too. Like, we're on the same page. Like, you know, like I mean, like, where are we looking? Right. So I think that, you know, I there's certain people who walk in and they kind of feel like they need to prove that they know what they're doing there and that they, you know, maybe don't need to be guided through the menu. And I'm all about that. And I understand that feeling.
There is a little defensiveness in the craft beer world sometimes.
Yeah. I went to a brewery and I asked, I don't do lactose. And so I asked, is there lactose in your sour? And the person got so, like, just went off on me that every sour has that lactose in it. And I was like, do you know what would be great? Do you mind checking? Oh, like, came right back and was like, doesn't have lactose. And I was like, yeah. Like, so I feel it. You know,
I wish
as a consumer.
I wish these two could have been with you.
Yeah. So it still happens, you know. Right. It's not something that while we've created this culture in our 100-seat, like, you know, our 100-person tap room, that when you walk out those walls, and I have to be careful. There's things that I do all the time that I'm like, oh, wait, like, you know, that probably came off incorrectly. I talk about it behind the bar all the time. I talk about, like, race and sex and gender, and we're just going into it, and I have to make sure that I'm, you know, also letting people enjoy their beer. Right. Some people don't want to talk about all these things. Politics. Yes.
Right. No, that's a good point, because you're at work, but they are trying to relax.
Yes.
And so it's like, you might want to get into kind of a heavy discussion, but the last thing they want to do sometimes is...
Yes.
And then there are people, I'm sure, want to engage, so it's tricky.
We live in Baltimore. We're in Pigtown. You know, our customers who are in the neighborhood have things happen, and they walk in, and they want to be heard, and I'm like, hey, but the person next to you is from California, and they're really scared about being in Baltimore. You know, like, yeah, let's tell them the good things. Like, we have to kind of cover ourselves from being just our little neighborhood brewery and making sure that we're representing things that are true about, you know, the city too.
That makes sense. Holly, I know that you've brewed all around the country, and how does Baltimore compare when it comes to sort of the inclusivity in the beer community and in general? Like, how are you feeling since you've been here?
Well, so I was at two kind of craft beer, like, meccas before, so in Asheville and in San Diego. And San Diego was definitely the most, at that time, was the most diverse beer drinking community that I'd been in, because there were a ton of Hispanic drinkers drinking craft beer, and it wasn't like a question. They weren't even the first generation that was drinking craft beer, right? Because there were just so many breweries in San Diego. And then moving to Asheville, the customer base was, like, not diverse.
Right.
At all.
To Asheville.
Yeah.
It's a lot of white people.
Yeah, it is. And there was good gender diversity in terms of who's working in the beer industry in Asheville, but there's other outside of that, you know, it was not diverse at all. And coming to Baltimore, I would say that I think the drinking community here is even more diverse than San Diego. And it's super cool to see how this beer scene changed while I was gone, and just to be making beer and connecting with all different types of people is satisfying on a totally different level.
Right, because you grew up in the D.C. area and kind of came back, so you sort of saw, okay, this is changed. Baltimore has changed.
Right, yeah.
How long was it?
So I was in D.C. for 10 years and then left for eight or so.
That's a long time. Yeah. I mean, I've definitely seen Baltimore change since I've been living here. Yeah. Do you feel sort of the same way at Suspended? Do you feel like you get like a... Or I'm sorry, at Checker Spot, do you feel like you get the same sort of diverse crowd as well?
Yeah, a lot of the people who come in, have a beer, they're always so impressed. They're like, there's gay people and black people and women and Asians over there and lesbian people over there. Like, the people get really excited, especially people who are more diverse. They come in and, you know, they have been to a lot of brewery, you know, people who go to brewery tap rooms tend to like to go to brewery tap rooms anywhere they go, just like I used to go, you know, vacations revolve around brewery tap rooms.
Totally.
And so, some people get so excited about different things, but they're like, there's one of everyone here. So that's really cool. And I always love hearing that, because sometimes I don't always notice, you know, you start looking around, like, there's people here. And so sometimes it helps when people say stuff to you. You're like, yeah, you know what? That's pretty cool.
And at the end of the day, it's like the common denominator is beer. So it's like you all have something to bond over. And if you're a beer fan, no matter like what your background is, you can like geek out over ABVs or whether lactose is in all sours or not or whatever. I mean, if you can have that common bond, I think that that's a really cool thing. So as owners and as people in high up positions, like, what can you guys do to keep improving that inclusivity and keep making everyone feel, you know, like they're in a safe space and that they belong to a community? How do you guys kind of do that on a daily basis, or what do you strive to do?
I made a lot of mistakes in the beginning working the tap room. When someone would make me uncomfortable, I would turn to our male bartenders and I was like, hey, you got that person. I'm going to go head over here, right?
That's what I would do, probably.
Yeah. And now I have women that work for us. And I started to realize I had like a really bad situation one night where I was like, why is she continuing to put her head down? And I was like, because I was putting my head down, you know, because I was just like, I'm just going to go work in this corner. And so my goal has really this year been to make people feel as safe. And when I allow things to happen with me, I am not modeling that behavior and making sure that they know that, hey, like, I'm willing to talk to this person and we're willing to lose a customer, and that behavior is not okay anywhere. For me, it's actually awesome. One of your taproom managers over at Guinness comes over into our spot. He lives in the neighborhood, and we talk a lot, and it's really cool having you guys because you have security. Right. And so it's not just the owner having to go up, but it's like you're setting a standard for what's okay in a taproom and what behavior is just not okay. And so you have that backing. And so that's really, you know, those types of atmospheres have made it more acceptable for us to say, hey, we're not going to put up with this. That's been really cool. The other big mistake, you know, we talk about sexism outwardly. I like to think about it inwardly too. Mm. I grew up in this culture as a minority and as a woman, and there was a lot of notions I had of what I was entitled to, what I deserved, what I should be lucky to have. Mm. When I first started Suspended, I didn't ask for 50% of the equity. I was like, oh, it's fine. I was like, you know what? But like to my sweetie, I'm like, but you're going to be doing a lot of the brewing and you'll probably have the late nights and all this stuff. And then I went and talked to a group of women. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, I'm lucky to be in this position that we're doing this. And then I went and talked to a group of my female friends and they were like, what? What did you just agree to? And I had to go back and be like, hey, I was just kidding. Like I'm going to put in 50% of the work I want, you know. Yeah. And those are conversations that I realized through this journey for me that I had like inwardly had some things that like society had been telling me for so long that I had really manifested in myself.
That's a really, really good point, the internal stuff. I mean, I think we've all been in situations where we have not asked for enough and not felt like we deserved enough or whatever it is, and it's all those society pressures that you're talking about.
Yeah, 100%. I think like I'm really focused kind of on leadership at this point in my career and kind of how I develop myself as a leader, and that is one of the absolute main things is kind of attacking my like internal biases and like calling something out when it happens. Mm-hmm. That's definitely the two hardest things.
Yeah, speaking up no matter the size of your company, whether it's like a 5-person company tap room or, you know, Guinness, for example, it's just a bigger company. So what do you guys think? Obviously, we know gender is not part of it. What just makes a good brewer to you guys? Like, what have you realized over the years, and what makes a good brewery company in general?
I guess you gotta constantly be learning. You never stop learning. So people, you think they already know everything.
Yeah.
Those are the people you don't want to work with.
They're the worst.
The beer's not gonna get better. Sort of really understanding the ingredients and having everything not be just about money. Like, okay, well, if I use this one, it's a few cents less a pound, but it doesn't taste as good, but whatever, it's still good, you know? So really focusing on those type of things. There are places to cut corners and places not to cut corners.
Mm-hmm.
And then just really understanding your ingredients. That's what brewing for a long time, whether it's home brewing or commercial brewing for a long time, you get to understand your ingredients, what works well together, when to add different things. It's just like cooking. Most brewers, I know home brewers too, are, even though they're guys, they're usually the cooks in the household.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they cook and their wife does not.
My husband's the cook, and I think it's great. And it's interesting you say ingredients, because Checker Spot, I've had the wackiest, most awesome ingredients from your beer that I'd never had in any other beer before, whether you're using like juniper berries or crab shells or whatever you guys are using. It kind of brings me to my next question, and I was gonna maybe talk about this while we sampled some beers, because Yaz was kind enough to bring two growlers from Suspended. Do you want to talk about? No, that's fine. You brought. She's worried. I think it's fine. People know there's beer on the table.
Okay. Let's go. Oh, I brought two with very different tastes.
That's fine.
I think let's do the barrel aged first.
Okay. Started out easy.
Well, it depends. This is 5%. This is 9%.
Yeah.
So let's do a small pour of the 9%. Perfect. Is it new yet? Almost.
That's enough.
All right. It's quarter up. I always joke with my friends. One time I said, oh, it's 12 o'clock somewhere. And they were like, just the phrase is it's 5 o'clock. I was like, damn it. So do you want to talk about this barrel aged beer?
Sure. This is, we just got two barrels from Bordy. But everything that we've had in our barrel house, which is just a couple of barrels in our brew house.
That's a barrel house?
Yeah, it is from Sagamore Distillery. So they actually had a cognac barrel that then they put whiskey in, and then we put an Abbey Double in there. I love barrel-aged beers. I love all the flavors. I love letting it sit and warm up. So
what did you think this one, and what's this one called?
This is a very long name. It's a cognac rye whiskey barrel aged pull the goalie.
Is that a soccer reference?
Pull the goalie is actually, it is, it's a hockey reference, and it's the concept of sometimes you have to make the really tough decisions and take that risk. So pull the goalie is the concept that in the last like 8 minutes of the game, if you actually pull the goalie, you have a chance of winning the game.
Taking the risk to get the reward kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what do you think the, and you guys are more experts than me, but
can
what
you
do you
say
think?
It one more time? It's like
the full thing.
Cognac, rye whiskey, barrel age, pull the goalie, Abbey Double.
So it was, were they two separate barrels?
So it was first a cognac barrel, and then it had rye whiskey in it, and then it had an Abbey
Double. Okay, so at Sagamore, I went from.
Yes.
So Sagamore got a discount, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So what do you think the barrels kind of imparted onto the flavor of the beer?
Super nutty,
on the nose.
Kind of cinnamony.
Got a little sweetness
from the wood, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a little sweeter and less sort of that sort of really strong sort of oak barrel.
Mm-hmm. It's really good.
So it was really nice.
It also drinks lighter than a 9%.
I know,
which is
a little dangerous sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Is this available at the tap room
it
now?
It is right now, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What have you guys been brewing lately that you're really excited about? Are there new releases? Anything coming up?
We just did our first barrel aged release. So we're pretty close with the guys over at Barflies on Ford Avenue.
They've got a great whiskey
great whiskey selection. So what they do commonly is they have their own special barrel that they get from whatever distillery.
Mm-hmm.
So they get the barrel plus they bottle all the whiskey, so they have their own proprietary blend, so then they get the barrel.
They did that with like Whistle Pig, I know, right?
Yeah, so we started with their Russell's Reserve, and so we did our Jean Quad, which is our Belgian quad, shockingly.
Yeah.
Jean starts at about 11%, and then plus the barrel of who knows what. So we aged that for about 5 or 6 months, and then just released that in bottles, so we have a few more bottles left.
Nice, so that's available at the brewery.
At the tap room.
At the tap room. Awesome.
Yeah, so large format bottles. And I guess of our beers, but it's really our flagship beers, the Juniperous IPA with juniper berries. So, I love using interesting ingredients, but not where it's smacking you over the head.
Mm-hmm.
So there's juniper berries in it, but the goal of the juniper berries was to complement the other hops. So there weren't any piney type hops. So you get the pininess just from the juniper berries instead of the other hops. So it's not... it's not going to hit you over the head. It's my favorite IPA around.
That's how it should be.
To be modest here.
No, you want to be brewing your favorite beer.
And it's always going to be available, and I'm very happy about that.
Awesome.
And then the other one is the Keeper Stout that we'll always have on Nitro.
It's so
that one's nice and 5%.
That one on Nitro is just, there's not this the creaminess of it, everything about it is so good.
Yeah, and we get the crab shells from J.M. Clayton's for fifth generation crab processor out in Cambridge. And he thinks I'm crazy, but he's like,
whatever.
How about it? Have the shells.
Oyster shells.
So it's a play on an oyster stout.
Totally.
Sort of Maryland style.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And what have you, I mean, I know a lot of blonde, Guinness mm-hmm. blonde is the biggest thing you guys are producing, mm-hmm. but you're always coming out with new styles.
Yeah, so we've got, usually if you come to the tap room, about 15 different beers that are constantly rotating. And there's usually anywhere from 2 to 4 new beers on every week because we're really turning it over quickly. So, I mean, what am I excited about right now? We've just started filling barrels, some wine barrels and bourbon barrels, so I'm very excited for that. We're not close to taking anything out yet, but putting it in for sure.
Where are you guys getting the barrels from?
Right now we've got a ton of bullet bourbon barrels, and we just got some red wine barrels from a small winery in Virginia. So it's exciting. We hope to expand that big time. But we've also, I'm super into our lagers right now, so we're lucky we get to use the Legacy Harp lager yeast.
Oh, wow.
Because that's a part of the Guinness family. And so we just brewed a dark lager collaboration with Diamondback. And that was super fun. We brewed on the snow day in February. Like, awesome. So everything was closed, but we were still brewing.
So they came
great.
To your facility?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. So that was really fun. I'm excited for that to release, hopefully, in late April.
Is there a name for that one yet, or are you still toying?
Still toying with the name.
Is it going to be as long as
Rye? No. Okay. It'll probably be really short because of how we have to name stuff.
Yeah.
We've started doing some can releases that you can only get at the brewery only. So I'm excited for the ones over the summer. I'm hoping we'll get some cool, like, tart fruit beers and some really good lagers out. So,
nice.
I had a black IPA from your can.
Oh,
release.
Cool.
It was phenomenal.
Oh, thanks. Awesome. I love black. I will forever and always, as a brewer, force that style. I know it's not commercially viable. Like,
I remember you said that last time
yeah,
we talked. You were like,
dang. Yeah. I just love it.
And obviously Guinness has a lot going on sort of with the outdoor space now that it's going to be mm-hmm. finally, because this is the first time for spring, for summer for
yeah.
Guinness.
So
that's
so exciting.
Exciting
for the weather. It'd be nice to have music back out there and just all the picnic tables and chairs and the lawn. It's going to be a really good spring and summer.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Do you want to pour the second one?
Sure.
And we can talk mm-hmm. about this guy too.
This guy is like my favorite thing that ever goes on tap. I say that I love like 9% barrel aged beers or stouts, but when this goes on, this is
they're all your
what
babies.
Is called our sour Persian.
Oh,
and so this, my dad actually brings 55 pounds of barberries from Iran, which is a super fruit. I should have brought some of that in, but got a ton of antioxidants.
Nice. Oh wow!
It's made with
it
usually we
like
make
tea.
It with basmati rice, so that's
cool.
Kind of the dish. One time I'll have to get my mom to.
Oh, wow.
Make it. Yeah, so awesome. The fruit is really cool. It's like got, it's a dried fruit, so it's got a little bit of like must to me. Like it's mm-hmm. just got this like unique flavoring.
Mm-hmm. Is the beer a sour beer at all, or is it a regular beer and just the tartness comes from
it's a blonde ale.
So
yeah.
All the tartness is from the
berries, yeah.
Really? Oh, wow.
I
think it is a kettle sour.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
This time we changed the way we did it. So that I'm not sure about. There was okay. some different process that we put in. But
it
I want
really another fruit, and I can't think of it. But
yeah, it is.
Definitely reminds me, like, it drinks like a tea, which I love.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a tea person over coffee, and so whenever I have a cocktail or a beer that reminds me of tea, I, like, gravitate towards it.
Yeah, because it's, like, fruity, earthy, tart, like, all
very earthy,
together.
Yeah.
Almost like, yeah, like an earthy, super tart cherry. Like one of those really.
It's like the cherry
like
seeds.
Early,
like
early,
when you like bite
cherry.
Into a cherry
yeah.
seed. Yeah.
Yeah, not that like fake cherry stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like the real from the earth cherry.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Did you say the name of this one?
A sour Persian.
Okay, cool. And this, so this is on.
This is on right now. It never lasts very long.
So is it named after your dad? Or?
No, no, I just really liked the name. It's probably more about me. to be honest, because. Josie names our beers, so I think this is more describing
yeah.
how I am yeah. sometimes.
yes. Well, I like how you went from taking your dad out to a brewery and saying, hey, this is what I'm going to do, to now he's shoveling fruit back for internationally for you for your brewery.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Clearly he's being, like, supportive of your career.
Yeah. My mom came when we opened with her camera, and she
Aww.
Was videotaping because she kept telling me. She was like, I don't know if this is going to work out. So the first day when there was, like, a line, she's just videotaping the line. She won't even come inside. She was, like, texting my family, like, can you believe it? People showed up to this brewery thing.
It's like we put the work in
yeah.
to get the word out there.
I got that a lot when we first opened, even from family members. everyone's asking, wait, so like you have regular customers, like people you don't know come to your brewery? It's like, yeah, that's how it works.
It makes me feel better. I still get that question of like,
it's just like crazy concept, like that we have regulars and like people that we don't know, we now do know, or.
I've gotten people that you don't know read your articles. I'm like, I hope so. Cause I don't know that many people.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know enough people to keep a business afloat. Yeah.
I'm like, my dad is still my biggest fan and will comment on them, but yeah. Other people. And so speaking of Checker Spot, you guys are opening the second floor soon.
Yeah. So it's the addition, so we'll have a real front door. You don't have to go in and out of the back weird hallway emergency exit.
I kind
of
liked that, though.
Yeah. It's like the secret tunnel. Yeah. You can still go in and out that way if you want.
Felt like Mission Impossible.
We have another option of a nice big glass door in the front now. Nice. Which is crazy. There's windows, like a whole bunch of windows. So it sort of doubles the size of the tap room on the first floor. And then the upstairs will then is double that size. So we're about to add a whole bunch of space. Upstairs will be primarily for private events and overflows like on Saturdays type thing.
Do you expect a big crowd on opening day for the Orioles?
Yes.
Yeah, because you're right by the stadiums.
Yep. So I think they'll be parking across the street. I'm sure our landlord will. That's like a couple days a year you have to pay to park there, otherwise it's free. Home Ravens games and then the O's opening day. But otherwise you can park. We've got hundreds of parking spots across the street underneath 395.
Yes, I get to walk there.
Yeah. I can see how
that's right. That's so cool. Is there anything else you guys wanted to plug just as far as new releases or events coming up, or you feel like you did it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for coming, and thank you for bringing beer samples. This is definitely a great, great Friday, and I really appreciate everything you all are doing for not just the craft beer industry, but for women and, you know, having people see you guys in the back of the brew house, I know has been inspiring for people. So thank you guys.
Well, thank you for your continued support. I mean, you've been supporting us since we were a brewery and planning, highlighting women in brewing since we've opened, and you know,
since
been struggling and yeah,
beers.
Yep,
happened.
Yep, that happened.
Yeah, and I remember talking to you guys like years and years before you started. So no, I'm always happy to do it.
It's
I'm
great
so
to have the support.
And
I mean, bringing women along is huge.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks so much for listening to the latest episode of Baltimore Boomerang. To hear more podcasts, visit bmag.co/listen.